Chapter 7. Some Things We Knew. Kjorl, the former matron mother of House Oblodra, had lost track of the decades she'd spent in the abyss as a slave to Ertu. She had endured torture beyond what any mortal could expect to survive. In many ways, it had broken her. Physically, she could barely stand. Emotionally, she existed on the edge of disaster, cowering at every moment, trembling at every sound. She was not Kjorl Odrin, as Kjorl Odrin had been, but a hollowed-out creature, thoroughly battered. Still, there was enough left of her to occasionally see beyond her safe hiding places and recognize those around her. Amazingly, her decades of training in the psionic disciplines had allowed her to keep some portion of who she once was locked in safe rooms she had carved out in the corners of her mind. This creature, this young drow priestess, was far more than her match. Kjorl knew that beyond doubt, felt she knew this little beast who called herself Ivanel, and had a hard time distinguishing her from the Ivanel Beenri Kjorl had known and hated. This one looked so different, though, and was far too young. The psionic Kjorl knew beyond any doubt that this was no illusion. Was it another drow, or had the old matron mother found a way to revitalize herself? An illithid, its head grossly misshapen, even more than usual, stood by the door at all times. The creature maintained boundaries in Kjorl's mind, preventing her from gaining a solid mental foothold on reality while constantly trying to get into her thoughts. She had to be ever vigilant against that, and then hope that her vigilance would be enough to keep the mental intruder at bay. Kjorl Odrin was free of the abyss for now. For the first time in more than a century, perhaps, but she remained in a cage. Caged by this one impossibly beautiful young drow woman who called herself Ivanel, the name of Kjorl's most hated adversary, hated more than even Ertu. Ivanel, the matron mother who had ruined Kjorl's life and had torn asunder the stone roots of House Oblodra, dropping the structure and most of Kjorl's family into the chasm known as the Claw Rift. Whether this was the same Beenri or someone new, Kjorl already hated the witch. And she knew beyond any doubt that there was nothing she could do about it. If Ivanel made a mistake, Kjorl could strike. But this one didn't make mistakes. I know not, Jarlaxle replied, holding the black feather belt out to Drizzt. She fashioned it. You would have me believe that you were presented with a magical item and did not bother to try it? Drizzt said as he took the belt. I do not even know if it is magical, Jarlaxle replied, and now it was Artemis and Treri's turn to offer his doubts in the form of a chortle. Well, said Jarlaxle. It has to do with that bow of yours, I expect, and I have no interest in bows. Most inefficient weapons, when a lightning bolt or fireball would better serve, says the knife thrower, and Treri remarked. Drizzt was only half listening by that point. He set the belt about his waist, fastening it with the remarkable diamond-decorated mithril buckle. He felt somewhat stronger immediately, just a bit, and fortified, as if he had strapped on some armor. But there was more, he realized, focusing his thoughts upon it. This might be one of the many magical items that conveyed its powers to the user's thoughts. If it even was magical, he realized, when nothing else came to mind, and he wondered if his earlier sensations of strength and armor were merely his own expectations manifesting. Perhaps Catti Bree had fashioned this simply as a measure of goodwill for allowing her to regain possession of Talmaril the Heartseeker. Still, nothing came to him. He adjusted the fit of the belt and fiddled with a curious cylindrical pouch at his hip, thinking it might serve as a sheath for a small wand. His hands went to the buckle, and he turned it up to consider the diamond gemstone image set upon it, a perfect likeness of the Heartseeker. He noted then that the buckle was double-layered, mithril upon mithril. Twist the top sheet, Entreri instructed. He too had noted the layers. Drizzt grasped just the top plating and gave a slight turn, and the glittering gemstone design popped free. But it was not a tiny diamond item he held in his hand. It was Talmaril. He felt the weight suddenly on his hip and understood before he even looked that the quiver had expanded as well, had become again the quiver of an Ariel, which would magically feed him arrows. "Clever woman," Jarlaxle commented. "You'll better navigate some of the tighter tunnels without that longbow sticking up from your shoulder." "What?" was all the shocked Drizzt could say. "A buckle knife," Jarlaxle replied. It was a weapon somewhat common among the rogues of Toril, a belt buckle that transformed into a deadly knife.
"A buckle bow, you mean," said Intrary.
Drizzt couldn't resist. He drew an arrow from his quiver, set it to the string of Tolmeril, and let fly, the missile drawing a silver line down the corridor before exploding in a torrent of sparks against the far wall, where the passageway bent to the side. The report of the blast echoed, and in those rocky grumbles came the shriek of demons.
"Well played," Artemis and Trary remarked. "Perhaps you might shoot the next one straight up above us, to collapse the tunnel upon our heads and save the demons you alerted the trouble of rending us apart. Or perhaps I will simply shoot you, so that I am less inclined to so readily accept death."
Drizzt returned, and he sprinted off ahead to meet the charge. Unused to being insulted, Intrary looked to Jarlaxle for support. But the mercenary just drew Kazidea and a wand, offered a wink, and came back with, "He has a point." The Room of Divination in House Bayenri was among the most marvelous of constructs in all of Menzo Berenzon. In this dark city, knowledge was power. Mirrors lined three walls, the fourth being the massive mithril door, which gleamed almost as reflectively as the mirrors. The apparatuses holding the mirrors were set several strides from each other all along the way, but were bolted to metal poles running floor to ceiling and not to the wall. Each apparatus held three mirrors, set on iron hangers, edge to edge to edge, forming a tall, narrow triangle. In the center of the room sat a stoop of white marble, a round bench encircling it. Dark, still water filled the bowl. Deep blue sapphires were set in its thick rim, the angle of their reflection making the water within seem wider, as if it continued far under the rim, beyond sight, beyond the bench. In a manner it did. Ivanel gracefully stepped over the bench and sat facing the water. She motioned for Kjorl to sit opposite her. The battered prisoner, so long tortured in the abyss, hesitated. With a sigh, Ivanel waved to Manolan Fay, and the priestess forcefully pushed Kjorl into place on the bench.
"Put your hands up here on the rim," Ivanel told the psionicist,
and when Kjorl hesitated, Manolan Fay moved to strike her.
"No,"
Ivanel scolded the priestess. Manolan Fay fell back a step in shock.
"No,"
Ivanel said more calmly.
"No, there is no need. Kjorl will come to understand. Leave us."
"She is dangerous, mistress,"
Manolan Fay replied, using the title Ivanel had instructed them all to use now, for Quenthal remained, to outside eyes at least, as matron mother of House Bayenri.
"Do not be a fool,"
Ivanel said with a laugh. She looked into Kjorl Odrin's eyes, her grin disappearing, her own eyes flaring with threat.
"You do not wish to be cast back into Ertu's pit."
The psionicist gave a little whimper at that.
"Now," Ivanel said slowly and evenly, "place your hands on the rim."
The woman did as instructed. Ivanel nodded at Manolan Fay to dismiss her, and the priestess hurried away.
"I do not wish to punish you, ever,"
Ivanel explained to Kjorl when they were alone.
"I will not ask much of you, but what I ask, I demand. Obey my commands, and you will find no further torture. You may even purchase your freedom, once we are truly in agreement, mind and soul."
The psionicist barely looked up, and seemed not to register the soothing words or the dangled carrot. She had heard it all before, Ivanel assumed, and likely 1,000 times during her time in the abyss.
Unlike Ertu, though, even El meant it, and she would convince Kiorl soon enough. After all, the psionicist was going to be in her thoughts, where deception was nearly impossible.
Together, we are going to find Kimuriel, Ivanel explained.
She put her hands on top of Kiorl's and uttered a command word. The rim of the bowl became less than solid, and the hands sank into the white marble, melded with the stoop. Ivanel felt Kiorl's terrified tug, but she wouldn't let go. She had placed enhancements of strength upon herself in anticipation of exactly this, and the psionicist might as well have been tugging against a giant. All around them, the mirrored apparatuses began to turn. The torches lighting the room went out and were replaced by a bluish glow emanating from the sapphires set in the rim of the stoop.
You know, Kimuriel, Ivanel whispered. Find him again. This time through the divination of the scrying pool. Let your mind magic flow into it. But do not send forth your thoughts to Kimuriel, unaccompanied by this scrying magic. Now send forth your thoughts, Kiorl, matron mother of House Oblodra. She felt the psionicist tense up at the mention of the doomed house, and Ivanel knew that reference would soon enough come to be her greatest weapon.
It took a long, long while. Out in the cavern, the light of Narvandel diminished by half, but finally, Ivanel felt her own thoughts going forth, following Kiorl's psionic call. They were joined by the magic of the stoop, their minds in perfect harmony, and Ivanel could hardly contain her delight at that realization. The stoop had been built for Baenri priestesses, of course, so they could join in ritual scrying. Quenthal and Sosumtu both had insisted that Ivanel's plan would not work here, that the stoop would not accept Kiorl's mind magic. But they were wrong. Through Kiorl's thoughts, Ivanel could see the cavern in the waters of the stoop and reflected at every angle in the mirrors. She felt Kiorl's regrets then, particularly when they neared the claw rift wherein House Oblodra had been cast. It proved to be too much for the fallen matron mother, and her mind sight failed, casting her and Ivanel back into the room. The water cleared to still darkness. The lights brightened, the torches reignited. Ivanel sat staring at Kiorl, their hands still joined within the marble. Kiorl tried to recoil. She had failed and expected punishment, Ivanel clearly saw.
Wonderful, the daughter of Grumpf congratulated. In one attempt, your vision fled the boundaries of this room. Did you feel it, Matron Mother Kiorl, the freedom?
Gradually, the other woman's expression began to change. Ivanel could feel her hands relaxing.
I did not expect that you would get out of the room on our first session, Ivanel explained. Next time we will go farther.
She pulled her hands out of the stoop, taking Kiorl's with her, and the rim appeared undisturbed.
We will find him, Ivanel said confidently. Kimuriel, she heard in her thoughts,
the first time Kiorl had communicated directly to her.
Yes. Yes, and soon, Ivanel promised. Promised Kiorl and herself.
Are we to be fighting these beasts all the way to Menzo Berenson? Entreri demanded 2 days later, when the trio had found yet another cluster of abyssal beasts. The assassin slipped a quick sidestep to avoid the overhead swing of a gigantic hammer, then stepped in quickly, Karin's claw easily and beautifully sliding into the Balgura's thick chest. The magnificent sword slowed when the blade hit a thick rib, the blade too fine to be chipped or snagged. And Treri's sigh revealed his pleasure at the power of the weapon. He hated this sword profoundly, but he could not deny its utility and craftsmanship. Balgura blood flowed along the trough in the red blade, pouring over the demon's torso. And Treri didn't merely retract the weapon. So confident was he in the power of Karin's claw, he tore it out to the side through skin and bone, leaving the dying demon nearly cut in half. And this was a Balgura, massively thick and heavy-boned.
Do you truly believe I mean to walk all that way? Jarlaxle replied with a laugh. And he too put his newly acquired sword to use.
Kazidea decapitated one mains as Jarlaxle began his slash, bringing the vorpal blade across to cut deeply into a second enemy.
Your lack of faith disappoints me.
When you're done talking, Drizzt said from the side of a small oval chamber, where he held the door against the press of several demons, a mixed group of thick-limbed Balgura, mains, and some other fiends Drizzt did not know. Slender and with tentacle-like arms that they effectively used as stinging whips, those tentacles, coming at him from behind a wall of allies, kept him moving and threatened to drive him back, which he did not want. He had the incoming monsters bottlenecked at the narrow entryway. One step back, and the beasts would fan out to either side, and the chamber would become a wild melee. Drizzt ducked a snapping tentacle, but moved forward from a crouch, his scimitars working furiously to poke at a Balgura, 1, 2, 3, as he tried to drive the brute into a retreat. But then it was Drizzt who was backstepping and covering his head with his cloak. Out of nowhere, it seemed, a whipping wind came up, and stinging sleet pelted down all around him. Magic, he warned, thinking it a trick of the demons, and unaware at that moment that they were taking the brunt of the ice storm. Left, Jarlaxle called, and Drizzt slid that way, and just in time. A glob of viscous goo from Jarlaxle's wand shot past him. It struck the floor right at the feet of the closest demons, but it didn't hold securely there. The floor was already a sheet of ice. The glob did stick to the front demons, though, who stumbled in futile attempts to maintain their balance. The momentum of the glob sent them skidding back into their allies. A second glob came forth, hitting the ice again right in front of the first row of enemies and sliding in with great weight and force, taking the whole ball of demons back to the far wall of the corridor, where they struggled against the goo, stuck together as one. Drizzt slid away his blades and let his left hand come to the belt buckle, his right to the small quiver, pulling forth Talmaril and setting an arrow so fluidly that an observer might still be wondering where the scimitars went. The chamber and corridor filled with streaks of silver as the drow let fly. Drizzt's barrage pummeled the helpless demons as they rent and tore at the unyielding magical globs and at each other. They were, after all, demons. The ice storm had ended, and Drizzt battered the group in relative comfort, explosive arrows pounding home, every shot boring into demon flesh. But a sudden buzzing in the air was his only warning, before a swarm of horrid demons soared past the trapped group. Kazme, like great houseflies with the head and face of a bloated human. Drizzt managed to alter the angle of his bow enough to shoot the first of the flying demons from the air, but the second dived upon him, and a host of others were close behind, entering the chamber. Or trying to. A wall of ice appeared in that opening. It resounded with the impact of the third of the Kazme, which collided with it full force. It shook again and again as the others crashed in behind. The one in the room had Drizzt diving for the floor, though, his bow flung aside and desperately going for his scimitars. Before he ever drew them, barely an eye blink of time, he found he didn't need them. A red blade swept down in front of him, tearing the edge off the Kazme's fly-like wings. As the demon spun and crashed, the great Netherese sword slashed in again, scraping the grotesque human face right off. And Treri didn't remain in place to accept Drizzt's thanks, leaping away for the wall of ice. He stabbed Karin's claw through one of the spiderweb cracks, the shriek of a Kazme telling them all that he had struck true. Well played, Drizzt congratulated Jarlaxle, thinking it he who had brought forth the ice storm and the wall. But Jarlaxle shook his head and shrugged, his smile wide. He turned away from Drizzt and from Entreri, who was stabbing through the ice wall yet again, scoring another hit on a second of the flying beasts. Quite the hero, Jarlaxle said, addressing another dark elf who had come into the small chamber, though from where Drizzt could not guess. He seemed about Drizzt's age and wore the robes of a wizard and the house emblem of Zor-Lauren. A small silver chain closed the collar of his fabulous Powafwi, showing him to be a master of sorcere, the drow school of magic. Be quick with your spell and remove us from this place, Jarlaxle instructed. Yes, do, Entreri added, speaking perfect drow and looking very much like a Menzo Berenir soldier behind the magical disguise of Agatha's mask. A quick look at the assassin revealed the source of the urgency in Entreri's voice. The ice wall was cracking more and more, pressed by the vicious and unyielding demons behind it. I cannot, the newcomer replied to Jarlaxle. Help our friend and hold the door, Jarlaxle said to Drizzt, his tone for the first time less than calm. The mercenary pulled the newcomer aside and conversed silently in the hand code of the drow, shielding his fingers from Drizzt and Entreri. Drizzt and Entreri met the onslaught side by side as the ice wall crumbled bit by bit and the demons pressed in. With Entreri beside him, Drizzt gave the beasts more leeway into the room. The pair were not afraid of being flanked. Drizzt double-stabbed a Balgura right in front of him, but quickly retracted the blades. He knew Entreri was coming by him, right to left. Drizzt rolled behind that rush, back to the right, coming in cleanly at a tentacle-armed demon distracted by Entreri's sudden departure, its confusion leaving Drizzt an opening he would not miss. Icing death, he buried nearly to the hilt into the fiend, the magic of the sword hungrily eating the demon's abyssal force. Twinkle, Drizzt brought to the side, prodding the elbow of the Balgura he'd just stabbed, preventing the brute from coming forward with its overhead chop. The demon let go with that hand, thinking to complete its attack with just one hand on the heavy hammer, but its other arm fell off. Karin's claw swept across, above the crumbling demon Entreri had already dispatched. Now they had room to maneuver again, and Entreri went forward, closing the bottleneck, and Drizzt fell back and gathered up Tolmeril once more. His first shot went over Entreri and the beast he battled, blasting another chasme from the sky. He called to his companion, directing Entreri's movements to provide openings through which the Heartseeker's deadly barrage could continue. Soon enough, all that remained were the least of the demons, the zombie-like manes, and Drizzt brought his bow across, the item shrinking once more and becoming diamond as he set it in place on the mithril buckle. He drew his blades and waded through the archway beside Entreri, out into the adjacent corridor and right into the midst of the mob of manes. Grasping, clawed hands never got near either of the two swordmasters, their speed and coordination too much for these least of demon kind to comprehend, let alone fight. But in the midst of that slaughter, the companions noted a greater presence coming fast to the fray, a pack of gigantic and hulking four-armed, dog-faced glabrezu, each with two arms ending in giant pincers that could cut a drow in half. These beasts knew no fear and hunted as cleverly as a pack of wolves. Their claws snapped eagerly. Drizzt and Entreri gasped and fell back, to be confronted by a shouting Jarlaxle. As one, they turned to protest, to tell Jarlaxle that they could not hold the door. But their protests were lost in their throats. A third drow had joined Jarlaxle and the Zorlaran wizard. The diviners escaped the room more easily this time. Their hands joined in the stoop, their thoughts entwined through the magic of the room and the powers of Kjorl's discipline. Ivanel guided her differently this time, not out into the cavern, but just into the hallway adjacent to the room of divination, where sat Manolin Fay, awaiting Ivanel's word. They hovered over the priestess, who was clearly oblivious to them. She was quietly singing, humming mostly, and to Ivanel's delight, she could hear Manolin Fay quite clearly. The scrying was strong, both clairvoyance and clairaudience, washing away Ivanel's fears that the injection of psionics would hurt the divine magic. Ivanel wondered how much the psionics might heighten the experience. To her, Ivanel imparted to Kjorl. Into her. Together they went to the seated priestess, close enough for Ivanel to see the small flecks of black around the iris of Manolin Fay's red eyes. And closer still, so that one of the priestess's eyes filled Ivanel's vision. Then it shifted, and they were looking across the hallway. Ivanel's thoughts became so badly disoriented that it took the powerful drow many moments to realize that the shift had been more than a turn of their disembodied consciousness. They were seeing as she was seeing, and when she looked to the side, so did they. Ivanel tried to read the priestess's thoughts, and when that failed, she implored Kjorl to do so. But that, too, failed, as did any messages or suggestions either of the two tried to impart upon Manolin Fay. They still saw the outside corridor through her eyes, and better still, she seemed fully unaware of it. Intellectually, Manolin Fay was no Ivanel, but she was a priestess of Loth of some renown and achievement, and still she was oblivious to the scrying. They lingered there for a long time, a very long time, until Ivanel became convinced that there was no limit here, that they could have remained in Manolan Fay's head, seeing through her eyes for as long as they wished, and that Manolan Fay would never become wise to it. Back in the room of divination, Ivanel pulled her hands from the stoop and sighed profoundly. "Maintain the connection to Manolan Fay," she ordered. Curel hadn't yet returned. "See through her eyes." On impulse, Ivanel rushed out of the room to the waiting priestess. "What is it, mistress?" a startled Manolan Fay asked. Ivanel merely smiled. Manolan Fay remained oblivious to the intrusion, and Kyol remained in there, seeing and hearing Ivanel exactly as clearly as was Manolan Fay. "Yes," Ivanel thought, "this will do." "Down," Jarlaxle warned, and in the heartbeat it took Drizdt and Treri to recognize the second newcomer, who was in the midst of casting. They surely did as they were told. The lightning bolt went above them as they flattened themselves on the floor. They felt its radiating heat as it flashed into the hall, through the glabrazu, and into the far wall. The report jolted the stone so profoundly that both Drizdt and Treri were able to regain their footing without even calling upon their own muscles to propel them upward. They spun around, blades ready. But as the smoke cleared, the way in front of them was empty of enemies. Entirely empty. Though they did see the Glabrezu's feet, still side by side in the hall, smoke rising from severed ankles. "Archmage," Entreri whispered. And Drizdt, too, stunned by the display to find his voice, could only nod his agreement. After a quick glance along the corridor to ensure that no more demons were about, the pair sheathed their weapons and Drizdt replaced his buckle bow. Together they returned to join Jarlaxle and the two wizards.
"You cannot,"
Fela Sorlaren was saying to the mercenary leader when they arrived. "The matron mothers have sealed the city from magical intrusion. You cannot magically teleport into the city, or near to the city, or even use a simple dimensional door to breach one of the cavern's outer walls. Nor will clairvoyance or clairaudience afford you any insights. Under the inspired guidance of Matron Mother Bayenri, they have been most complete and effective in controlling the flow of such spells." "But you are here and mean to return," Jarlaxle replied. "I was instructed by Sosumtu Bayenri, mistress of Arachtinileth and high priestess of the Fane of the Goddess, to report to Luskin with news of the changing rules in Menzo Berenzon. If you or any of Bregendierth intend to magically return to Menzo Berenzon, Jarlaxle, you must do so with the express permission of Matron Mother Bayenri." He glanced at the other two. "She would not give permission for these companions of yours, whom she does not know, I am certain." "Oh, she would know one of them," Gromph remarked, "and would welcome him with open fangs." Jarlaxle threw a smirk Gromph's way, then shook his head and said to the Archmage, "She suspects that I am in some way connected to your disappearance. No matter, then." "The way is magically sealed," Phaelus reiterated. "There is always a seam in even the finest armor. Even in the armoring spells the greatest wizard might conjure," Jarlaxle returned, grinning at Phaelus, then turning to encompass Gromph as well. But Gromph paid him no heed, Drizdt noted, and was instead staring hard at the fifth drow of the group, Artemis and Treri, and with the rare hint of puzzlement gnawing at the edges of his expression. "You cannot detect the truth, can you?" an obviously pleased Jarlaxle asked the Archmage, clearly catching on to the same thing Drizdt had noted. "That is your human toy?" Gromph asked. And Treri snickered, but not too loudly, and none, not even Jarlaxle, were about to correct Gromph. "I wish I could decipher the magic of Agatha's mask," Jarlaxle lamented. "So many grand old artifacts we have seen. Ah, but to have known the greatest days of Faerun's magic." "We are rebuilding the host tower," Gromph reminded him. "Do you believe that I cannot unravel the magic of that simple mask, should I try?" "I ask that you wait until I am done with it," Entreri remarked. "If you ever address me again, I will turn you into a frog and step on you," Gromph promised, his voice as steady and sure as anything Drizdt had ever heard. Drizzt looked to his often too proud companion and noted an almost involuntary twitch of Entreri's fingers. Surely the assassin wondered if he might get out his deadly dagger or that awful sword and put one or both to use on Gromph before the Archmage could cast a spell.
Faelis speaks the truth, Gromph confirmed. The matron mothers and high priestesses have joined together in grand communal rituals, weaving their powers into a shield that has magically sealed off Menzo Berenzon. They know that Demogorgon is about, or was, and his magical powers cannot be underestimated. The mere sight of him can drive a man to tear out his own eyes, I have been told, Jarlaxle replied, and he was staring at Gromph's eyes as he spoke. Drizzt nearly gasped when he looked closely at the Archmage to see the scratches that confirmed Jarlaxle had referenced the actions of Gromph himself. Drizzt didn't know much about Demogorgon, though it was a name that he, like every adult of every sentient race on the face of Toril, had surely heard. Looking at Gromph, perhaps the most powerful wizard he had ever met, a wizard worthy of being spoken of in the same breath as the great Elminster himself, Drizzt suddenly realized just how profoundly he preferred to keep it that way. Even with the wards of the matron mothers, surely Gromph can break through the barrier and get us into the city, Jarlaxle said. No, Faelis answered, his subsequent sharp intake of breath and his expression clearly revealing that he had blurted it out before realizing that he was insulting the Archmage of Menzo Berenzon, who was standing right beside him. At the very least, such an intrusion would alert the matron mothers that Archmage Gromph was involved, he quickly added. In that event, you would be compromised. Jarlaxle sighed and seemed at a loss, though only for a moment, of course. He was, after all, Jarlaxle. Kimmoriel, he said with a wry grin. Faelis nodded. His magical abilities are apart from their wards, Jarlaxle reasoned. In the days of House Oblodra, the greatest houses always held a measure of fear and watchfulness for Matron Mother Kjorl, for she and her mind magic minions could walk past their wards. Thinking he had found the answer, Jarlaxle grinned more widely and nodded at his own cleverness, until he got to the scowling Gromph. I will reduce him to ash, the Archmage promised, and there was no compromise or debate to be found in his tone. Yes, dear Jarlaxle, do go find him. All four of the others took a cautious step back from the sheer weight of the threat. He was your instructor and what you most desired, Jarlaxle dared to reply. Was, said Gromph, and he betrayed me. You do not know that, Gromph glared at him. Am I to believe that mighty Gromph Beanri considers himself to have been used as a puppet by Kimmoriel? Jarlaxle answered. You think it was Kimmoriel who tricked you into casting a spell beyond your control? One that brought the great Demogorgon into the Tower of Sorcerer? There are many times when Jarlaxle speaks too much, Gromph warned. But that cannot be, Jarlaxle pressed anyway. How can Kimmoriel have had knowledge of that kind of power? To summon the Prince of Demons, every matron mother in the city would have murdered her own children to find such a secret. Most matron mothers would do so simply for the pleasure of it, Entreri remarked under his breath, so that only Drizzt could hear. To summon a power that cannot be controlled? Faelis asked doubtfully. Yes, because such a threat alone would elevate the summoner, Jarlaxle insisted. It matters not if House Beanri or Barrison Delarmgo or Zorlauren or any of the others would also be consumed in the process. A matron mother possessing the power to call forth the greatest of demon kind would dominate the ruling council by mere threat. Besides, such an act would be to the pleasure of Lolth, the Lady of Chaos. Is not Demogorgon the epitome of chaos even among his own frenzied kind? No, it could not have been Kimmoriel, Jarlaxle finished. You deflect and dodge, Gromph declared. Then he added with finality, If I find your Oblodrin stooge, I will destroy him.
When Jarlaxle started to respond, Gromp held up a finger, just a finger, and it was enough of a warning to lock Jarlaxle's retort into his throat. "You should be leaving," Gromp said to Jarlaxle and his two warrior companions a few uncomfortable heartbeats later. "You have a long walk ahead of you." "Your own journey will prove no less trying," Jarlaxle replied to his brother. "Farewell. Perhaps we will meet again soon," Phaelus said, and he began casting a spell that would transport him back to the waiting Sosumtu. Gromp, too, began casting the spell that would return him to Luskin, but not until offering a derisive snicker at the trio of travelers. "Always a pleasant one," Entreri said when the wizards were gone. "It will be his death," Jarlaxle noted. "Someday." "Not soon enough," Entreri muttered. "The way is full of demons," Drizzt reminded them both. "We'll be fighting every day," Entreri agreed. "And likely we'll find little rest when we pause our journey to eat or sleep. Would it have been too much trouble for Grom for the other one to have magically brought us nearer to the city at least?" "The matron mothers are watching for such spells," Jarlaxle said as they started off once more. "Who knows how far their scrying eyes might extend?" "Even here?" Entreri remarked, glancing around as if expecting the might of Menzo Baranzon to descend upon him then and there. Drizzt, too, shuffled nervously, but when he looked at the nonchalant Jarlaxle, he found some peace. "This was the appointed meeting place," Jarlaxle explained to the others. "No one is more careful than Archmage Gromph, and no one is less inclined to have a visit with the matron mothers. I trust that we were properly warded from any prying eyes."
"But going forward?"
Drizzt asked. "They are looking for magic. We'll be using little, so it seems." Jarlaxle paused and turned his gaze aside, a sudden thought taking his attention. "We will eventually need Kimoriel," he explained after a few moments. "And not just to help us get into the city. Perhaps we can accomplish that on our own. But Dahlia's mind is twisted, her thoughts are wound like a writhing pile of worms. The only person who can hope to unravel that is Kimoriel. Rescuing Dahlia without that resource would do us little good. Better in that event that we simply and mercifully end her life." Drizzt glanced sideways at Entreri as Jarlaxle spoke and noted the man's profound grimace.
"So just call to him now, then, and let us be done with this," an agitated Entreri said, "and save us the pain of the march."
It wasn't about the march at all, Drizzt knew, or about any demons that might rise to block their path. Entreri had to get to Dahlia and had to learn if she could be saved. His tone suggested that he merely wanted to rid himself of the inconvenience, that he had better things to do with his time. But were that the case, why would he even be with them now? "We are in less of a hurry than your impatience demands," Jarlaxle answered. "Let us search the tunnels about Menzo Baranzon and devise our plans, perhaps?"
"Battling fiends all the way?" Entreri asked.
Jarlaxle laughed, but Drizzt caught something behind that dismissive gesture. And then it hit him. Jarlaxle didn't know how they were going to accomplish this mission. Jarlaxle, the maestro who prepared for every eventuality, who never stepped along the roads of a journey without complete preparation, was truly at a loss. And had been since the beginning. Jarlaxle took the point and started away. And Drizzt held Entreri back a bit so that he could ask, "Have you ever seen him like this, so unsure?"
"Consider where we're going," Entreri replied, "and consider that the whole of Menzo Baranzon is on its highest guard right now. Would you believe his confidence if he pretended as much?"
Drizzt couldn't disagree with that. Menzo Baranzon was shut down, the drow locking out the demons and monitoring every movement about the city. If their task to sneak in and steal Dahlia away had seemed difficult before, it surely seemed impossible now. Foolhardy. Suicidal. Jarlaxle was uneasy, that much was clear, because he now lacked information about his adversaries. Lack of knowledge was never Jarlaxle's way.
They were still going, though, each putting one foot in front of the other on the winding way into the deeper underdark. Perhaps Jarlaxle was already considering ways in which he might correct his lack of understanding and accordingly adjust his course. Perhaps he would find the solutions. Trist had to believe that, had to hope for that, because he wasn't about to turn back either. His friendship to Dahlia, his debt to Jarlaxle, and surprisingly, his relationship to Artemis and Treri would demand no less of him that he try. "We always knew this would be difficult," he said to Intreri as they made their way along in Jarlaxle's wake. Up ahead there came a demonic shriek, followed by a sharp whistle from Jarlaxle. Already the fiends had found them once more.
"Some things we knew," Intreri corrected with an angry snort.
But he drew Karin's claw and his jeweled dagger and rushed ahead.